you were downtown on March 6th.
And I was.
You were arrested.
That's right. Yeah.
And what was that protest like? Was the point getting arrested, or were you arrested to show I'm willing to do whatever it takes for this?
Yeah. In the principles of nonviolent action, which is what we did, the end goal is never the arrest itself. It's a tool that's used when we're at a point when all of the normal channels have been exhausted. And so, you know, we gathered with a group of clergy and faith leaders about a month before the action and sat in a room and looked at each other and said, okay, you know, here we are. We're approaching the deadline for DACA. And we know that 80% of U.S. Americans agree on a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers. And yet we have marched, we've held vigil, we have prayed, we have met with our congresspeople, and still nothing has happened. What do we do now? So when I think about what we were doing on March 6th, when I think about, you know, the 19 of us who held our hands together and stretched across the street and chanted over and over, Olam Chesed Ibane, and it means we will build this world of love. And so in doing that kind of an action where you're risking arrest, where you're taking things to the next level, to me, it's part of that theology of resistance where we're doing something at another level that's really disrupting. It's disrupting what people consider to be acceptable or nice or polite. And in that way, it's maybe disrupting what people understand about who is in this fight and whether or not they should be part of this fight.
Why did you and the group feel like this was the best way to go about this?
In part because there's such a rich tradition. So for me, as a Sister of Providence, I come from a long line of women who have participated in civil disobedience as a way of drawing attention to an issue that, you know, gets reported on differently than if you just show up at a rally. So for me, I see sisters from my community who have, you know, crossed the line at the School of the Americas protests. We have one sister who spent 6 months in federal prison, and just the level of commitment and what that communicated through that action that you could never say in words, that you could never say by having another prayer vigil or another march. There's just something about that that leads people to ask why and to dig deeper who might not normally even pay attention.
What should people who want to see the kind of change you want to see do to affect that?
I think the first thing that comes to my mind is to vote. One of the big things we're going to be doing this year as part of Faith in Indiana and our network is really animating people to get to the polls who haven't been part of this public conversation before, and make sure that they know that their voices matter. Locally, I would encourage people to get involved in Faith in Indiana, because to see people from different faith traditions coming together and how we can rally around the things that we have in common. There's a lot of power there, and there's a lot of ability to do some good. I might say that to affect the kind of change we want to see, we actually need to animate people into public life who champion the values that we hold. We actually need to see people running for office who believe in the dignity of every person. We actually need to see people interested in being on our school board or being our mayors or our sheriffs who are going to stand up for the people who right now are being told that their lives don't matter and that they're disposable and that they're throwaway people. We need people moving into those roles of leadership who hold those values and will hold that line and won't back down in the face of bribes, in the face of challenge, of fear, because it's a value that they hold deeply.